From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, January 24th, 2019. And on this day, Governor Janet Mills has appointed a new director of opioid response. We'll look at the new position and nominee Gordon Smith. And many Maine kids have chronic health conditions, but there's a shortage of school nurses in some areas. That's ahead in just a moment. Democratic Governor Janet Mills has picked a former lobbyist from the state's leading physician organization to oversee the state's response to the opioid crisis. Gordon Smith is former vice president of the Maine Medical Association. He'll become what Mills is calling the director of opioid response. It's a position created to tackle an epidemic that has claimed more than 1,600 lives over the past 5 years. Mills and Smith say their focus will be on medication-assisted treatment and destigmatizing the illness of addiction. Steve Missler has more.
While the governor hasn't overtly criticized the LePage administration's approach to the opioid problem, she has made it clear that she'll take a very different tack, focusing on treatment instead of law enforcement and on addiction as an illness instead of a moral choice.
These people are not junkies. These are our neighbors, our coworkers, family members, schoolmates. They are our sons and daughters. They are people without labels, citizens without stereotype.
Smith will lead what Mills is calling her Prevention and Recovery Cabinet, which will include several state agency chiefs and Attorney General Aaron Fry, and coordinate law enforcement, prevention, treatment, and recovery responses to the epidemic. Smith told reporters that increasing access to medication-assisted treatment requires building an infrastructure to support it, including easing restrictions on physicians' ability to prescribe it and convincing recovery centers to accept patients who are taking Suboxone or methadone.
We know much of what needs to be done, but we need the political will to do it.
In Smith, Mills has chosen a person well acquainted with the political forces in Augusta. Smith has been a lobbyist for the Maine Medical Association for 25 years. In 2011, the organization opposed a bill designed to limit and track opioid prescribing by doctors and convinced the state legislature to study the issue instead. But in 2016, the MMA did back a bill that placed limits on opioid prescriptions and created monitoring, a move that highlights the organization's evolution on the problem of overprescribing opioids for pain. Ann Smith says doctors now fully endorse medication-assisted treatment.
The medical community, I think, is fully on board that the gold standard is medication-assisted treatment. The problem is that not all aspects of the population are on board with that.
Smith was referring to the sentiment among some people that medication-assisted treatment is expensive and essentially swaps dependence on one drug for another. He says changing that belief will be critical to tackling the crisis, a role that he says Mills has already embraced.
Executive leadership helps. I mean, we've not had a situation here in recent years where the executive leadership of the state has been saying the things that Governor Mills is saying, that this is a chronic illness, these are our sons and daughters, and they need to be loved, they need to be treated.
Smith didn't mention former Governor Paul LePage by name, but the reference was clear. LePage took a dim view of treatment, and he also vetoed bills that expanded access to the overdose reversal drug naloxone. Mills is taking a different approach. She says she'll sign an executive order directing state agencies to take steps towards combating the epidemic in about 2 weeks. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
As the federal government shutdown continues, tens of thousands of Transportation Security Administration officers across the U.S., including in Maine, are working at airports without pay. With no end to the shutdown in sight, some travelers passing through the Portland International Jetport are now stepping up to help TSA employees. Patty White has that story.
We all know the types of things that passengers typically toss into plastic bins in airport security lines. Computers, phones, shoes, car keys. But lately, at the Portland International Jetport, other items have been showing up in those bins.
We're getting a lot of Hannaford gift cards.
William Riley is a transportation security officer. He's also the vice president of the local union of the American Federation of Government Employees. He says the gift card donations started coming in about a week ago. There are restrictions about what TSA officers can accept. No cash, no gift cards for individuals above $20, and no gift cards for the group that exceed $50. With the gift cards they can accept, Riley says, managers are buying lunch and grocery supplies for employees, setting up a makeshift food pantry in the office.
There was macaroni and cheese, there was pasta, there was bottles of tomato sauce, there was canned vegetables and fruit and, you know, mainly non-perishable items.
There's an increasing need for these basics, Riley says, because this Friday will mark a month that TSA officers have gone without paychecks.
I understand, you know, the border, the wall. I mean, I understand all that's extremely important. But what about your citizens? I mean, don't we deserve pay?
Riley says worker morale is better than he would have expected at this point, and he chalks it up to the kindness of travelers, people like Bristol Ivy of Portland. Before catching a flight to California on Thursday, she picked up a few gift cards to hand out to TSA workers.
I got them a Hannaford's gift card because I figured that would be the most broad-ranging and kind of cover all the bases.
Ivy says she travels frequently for work, so TSA employees are on her mind.
I just really appreciate that these guys are still here working and doing kind of a thankless job in the best of circumstances, and this is not the best of circumstances. So the least I could do.
The union that represents federal employees has filed a lawsuit against the federal government seeking payment of affected workers. Unions that represent air traffic controllers, pilots, and flight attendants, meanwhile, issued a warning Wednesday about growing safety concerns due to low staffing and unpaid employees having to work overtime to maintain operations. The partial government shutdown's effect on safety was on the mind of Mike Siraki as he traveled from Portland to D.C. on Thursday.
I do have a feeling that because of the stalemate, that the solution will only come after a disaster.
Siraki himself is a furloughed employee. He works for the National Science Foundation. As he waits to be called back to work, he says the situation has become frustrating and depressing. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
More than 10% of students in Maine public schools have chronic health conditions like asthma, type 1 diabetes, and seizure disorders. Some local school officials say they believe the numbers of students with serious health needs is growing, and that can be a particularly difficult problem in small rural school districts, which may not have a full-time school nurse. Robbie Feinberg has more.
Hey, bud.
In the middle of her kitchen in Farmington, a woman we'll call Betsy pulls out a blood sugar monitor, a syringe, and a vial of insulin for her 6-year-old son, Bryce. Betsy asks that we not use her last name due to privacy concerns. Bryce cringes when he sees the needle, but over the past few months, he's become well acquainted with it.
So I'll give him insulin now, and then the school will give him insulin in 3 hours. Every 3 hours. Ready? Plus snacks.
It's a routine that Bryce goes through several times a day after being diagnosed with type 1 diabetes last October. The disease requires constant maintenance, blood checks and injections from early in the morning until late at night. Betsy says the diagnosis changed everything for Bryce and the whole family. Both Betsy and her husband work in the medical field, and she says it was hard at first just to send Bryce to school.
Because we know that insulin can save his life and it can also end his life if given too much or too little. So therefore, the first few weeks that he returned back to school, my husband and I took time out of our own positions and went in and assisted the school nurse and the teachers, did some education and training as far as injections, recognizing highs and low blood glucoses.
The family situation was complicated by the fact that the local Mallet Elementary School doesn't have a full-time school nurse. The nurse is out at other schools 1.5 days per week. Betsy says she considered coming in herself to take care of Bryce.
Or hire a private nurse, which we don't have the means to take care of. It left me for 5 weeks wondering if I was going to have to leave my own position.
RSU 9 Superintendent Tina Maserve sees the nursing limitations in the context of a larger issue facing schools, particularly in rural Maine, the growing number of students with serious health conditions. A recent report from the Maine Department of Education finds that more than 10% of students across the state have so-called chronic conditions, such as diabetes, seizure disorders, or life-threatening allergies.
And we want to be able to provide for them.
And then we also want to make sure that when they're unexpected and there's high cost, that there's some resources available for schools to be able to cover that.
But in some cases, those resources just aren't there. Kelly Stroud, a professor of nursing at the University of Maine, says that in general, according to her research, more affluent school districts in Maine tend to provide more nurses per child than do poor districts like those in Washington County.
What we see is that those schools are strapped more for resources and they don't get the health resources that the affluent schools have that are doing well.
The state's education funding formula provides one nurse for every 800 students in larger districts and one for every 720 students in smaller ones. Those are numbers that many local officials say are inadequate and far too broad and don't take into account the precise needs of students within each school. Janice Hogan, a school nurse at Camden Hills Regional High School, says adequate nursing can improve everything from nutrition to student attendance. But that's often not so when a nurse is stretched thin.
Prior to working here, I had 5 schools. I had 850 students. So I had 5 administrators, 5 sets of parents, 5 sets of staff, and I had to train everybody on different issues in every single school. So it was really just putting out fires.
And even when there is enough money to pay for nursing staff, smaller districts can have a hard time finding people to fill the positions. Jill Adams is the executive director of MADSEC, the organization that represents Maine's special education administrators. She says the toughest positions to fill are often special education teachers, speech therapists, and nurses.
And I'm sure that many of the places up north, over west, even in the southern part of the state, they have difficulty sometimes finding those services.
To solve the problem, schools have limited options. Occasionally, a student can be sent to another school with more medical resources, though that can lead to transportation issues. Administrators say that for some services, such as speech therapy, schools have used video to connect with providers in other states. Eric Herlin, an attorney who specializes in special education law, says a common strategy for schools is to consult with doctors to determine which services truly require a nurse, and then designate trained staffers for other needs.
And to get the doctor to think hard about what the particular functions actually are that have to be done for this medically fragile child.
Back in Farmington, the district has found a temporary solution for Betsy and her son Bryce. It's brought in a substitute nurse to Bryce's school on certain days, which Betsy says has brought some relief to the family during the school day.
Whether she needs to go get him on the playground or give him a snack before gym class so he can participate in as much normal activities as possible.
But the solution isn't permanent, and Betsy says she expects that as her son grows up, she'll need to keep working to ensure that he gets the care he needs. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Thursday, January 24th, 2019. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.